within that, as you move down through, then there's a priority scheme that says you can consider things like cost of services and serviceability and other issues. So what we think will happen, or at least the way we've got the schedule laid out right now, we will bring a draft economic opportunities analysis to the committee for review and discussion in September, and hopefully we'll circulate that at the end of August, so that you'll have at least 3 weeks to review it, and we'll also be soliciting written comments on that. And then we'll move in October, we'll begin to talk about the alternatives analysis, and the first thing that we'll bring to the committee is a set of proposed study areas for you to look at and say, do we agree with this? And that we may want to get some guidance from you on some high-level filtering criteria in terms of what actually gets brought forward in that process. So, for example, there are a lot of steep slopes that surround Springfield that really won't, they'll meet a very narrow spectrum of the identified land needs, and so the question is going to be, how much of that do you really want to carry into an alternatives analysis when we haven't identified a real need for those kinds of lands? So that's kind of a preview of where things are hopefully going to go here.
Okay, thank you. Any questions about the preview? Okay, well, let's get to today's feature. So we're going to talk about the economic development objectives and try to finalize that.
That is our hope.
Okay.
Yeah, and Beth is going to take notes, and I'm going to make a proposal about how to work through these, but I want to give you a little preview on how we got to this. And for those of you who weren't at the last meeting, including myself, what we did was we had a couple work sessions with Council and Planning Commission in June. And basically what we did at those work sessions with Council and Planning Commission was to say, please identify your vision for economic development in Springfield over the next 20 years. So identify the kinds of things that you'd like the city to focus on. They did that, and what we did was we circulated a draft of 15 objectives that we developed out of that, and we shared it with them, and they gave us some input. But that is what is reflected in here. At the last meeting, my understanding was there was a little discussion about these, but not as much as we'd hoped. But our intent was to fill out the next level underneath these. And so once we've got an objective, then it begs the question, how does the city implement that objective? What are the actions that it will take or strategies that it will implement? Because we didn't get through all of that at the last meeting, we posted an online survey, which I think we got 7 responses to. And those responses are reflected in this draft. And in addition to that, we identified two objectives that came from the committee and an additional objective about brownfields that that we discussed and identified at the staff level. So that is what you have in front of you. This is, we think it is a good framework to start with, but it is not complete. What we will do next is to take these concepts and to massage them into something that's a little more coherent than simply the statements that you provided to us. We'll combine the ones that seem to overlap. But what we would like to do with you today is to basically step through these objectives and see whether you have any final comments on them, whether you think there's things that we missed or things that that maybe are overemphasized in this, and basically get direction so that we can proceed to finalizing the draft of the economic development strategy. Okay. So that's what we'd like to accomplish. Now, the second part is my proposal for how we'd like to accomplish that. And I think probably the easiest way to go through this, and let me make one other comment about this so that in case anybody's feeling like we're pushing on you, don't push back on us too hard. This won't be the last time you see this. What we'll do is we'll refine this and flesh it out. It'll probably turn into something like a 10-page discussion of the city's economic development strategy, and it will come back to you either in a memo form or as part of the EOA in September. So you will have another crack at looking at this and providing suggestions. What we don't want to have you come back with in September is saying, no, you got this all wrong, you missed a whole bunch of things, and there's things in here that shouldn't be in here. If that's what any of you think, please raise those concerns here this evening so that we're aware of them and we can figure out how to work through them. So that's a little background on that. What I'd like to do, Dan, is amenable to this, is to have Dan kind of facilitate stepping through these one by one by the objectives and just see if folks have comments on either the objectives or the strategies, implementation steps underneath them, or think we missed something that you thought of that as you see these collective responses that's missing out of here. So is that okay, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that we've got 18 objectives. Some only have one bullet point, some several, and we just take them in order and take a minute or two to take a look at each one and add or debate or otherwise delete or tweak any of these. Everyone okay with that? And again, as we've heard, this won't be the last time something comes to mind. We can certainly revisit this in the future. So, without any further ado, objective number one, provide an adequate supply of sites of varying locations, configurations, and size to accommodate industrial and other employment over the planning period. And again, that's 20 years out to the future, as identified in the Springfield Economic Opportunities Analysis. And the bullet points under this objective is really long, I guess. Provide land to meet the land needs and preferences of a variety of types of businesses. Encourage the use of existing land within the UGB by encouraging infill and redevelopment. And the last one is assist with redevelopment through providing incentives for redevelopment and through land assembly. Anyone have anything to add?
I answered the survey, and I guess I hit the wrong button and it went to my grandmother or something into cyberspace. A couple of just comments on this, and I just wondered if in the words that we use to try to get to the objective, and I think the objective, and I'm re-spoken, is let's have an adequate supply of land of different types because we need to accommodate different kinds of commercial and industrial future employment and projects, and different sizes. I wondered how that it didn't really kind of match up with how things work in the real world. You know, you have what I started to imagine was sort of, here's 100 acres, and we have we divide it into one plot of 50, and there's another one of 25, then there's a 10 and two fives, and I don't know if we get down to how this sounds to people, if that's really how it works when you have a 20-year supply. It seems like you just want, you know, I don't know if you can be so descriptive to say, we've got different size. We proactively went out and got different sizes. If you're especially looking to go outside the UGB, you may pick up 500 acres. It's just going to be 500 acres, you know, for all users and things.
Can I make a comment, Dan?
Yeah.
If you skip forward to objective three, it might address that concern. Reserving large sites for special developments in industries. Is that the issue that you're getting at?
I just think it's a... You're going to get, in each one of those descriptive words, I would be, you know, saying, what does it mean, different configuration? What does different size mean? And can you really be that particular to say we're going to put away small sites, big sites? I see number three, you want to have all this, that ability. So anyway, I just a comment.
So can I ask a clarifying question to the committee, and perhaps you can give us some direction on and how you got best to craft this strategy ultimately. You have a couple choices when you put something like this together. One is to draft it as more of a grand vision with a broad framework that gets you from here to there. Another is to draft as a grand vision, but then have measurable outcomes that are defined in the strategy. I think interpreting what Dan is saying is if you can put more of those measurable outcomes into more meaningful strategy than it is if you just have these kind of broad objectives. Is that
kind of, yeah. I mean, I think they're just going to be asked to define that sooner or later anyway when you try to go for implementation. So it's a fine point, but I just thought, I just don't know if it's, if you're looking at a 20-year supply, I mean, you kind of generally are going to talk in terms of we need 1,200 more acres for residential. Or, you know, it's kind of assumed residential of all types, you know, and it's just 1,200 acres. So I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but. Yes, Johnny.
I was under the assumption that we're waiting to get an inventory so we kind of know what we have to work with. That's what I've been kind of waiting for. So I thought maybe this is general now, but we'll still get to it.
Well, there will be an inventory, yes, and there will be an analysis of what the city needs, and that will all be documented in the economic opportunities analysis. Okay. So that document will get at that level of specificity that Dan is suggesting is needed.
Philip?
On the third bullet, it's the implementation strategy beneath this objective. You know, I guess maybe just kind of ask the question, would we be well served to kind of disaggregate this maybe into more than one thought, more than one objective? Because it seems as though I could see land assembly could be something that's a tool that would be needed or used for not just redevelopment, but some new development opportunity that might come into play. It could be redevelopment that does need land assembly, but does need some other kind of incentive. So I don't know if this was intended really just to deal with a certain strata of type of development, or, you know, I'm not even sure really if the term redevelopment just means taking an old building and repurposing it, an old site, and doing something different with it, rezoning it, knocking down a building and doing something entirely different, or what? So that could conceive of different things, the way you could term that, and that, you know, because you do have this very broad objective that would be kind of all-encompassing of all different types of configurations and locations and so on. Land assembly could be something that's needed both for a redevelopment opportunity and for a greenfield type development.
Well, I think Keith Southside's a pretty good example. I don't know if it was in the same ownership, but there's many tax lots that are on the site. Same with Warehouse, Roseboro, all the major industries in Springfield are. Even Symantec has more than one tax lot that its building sits over. So I guess I'm confirming what Philip is saying is it's something that's worth considering. If you'd like us, we can tease those apart and have separate objectives that address them.
No, I'm just, my only point was just that land assembly may be required not just, you know, for right. Any and all types of developments or future development.
Go ahead. Well, maybe my point is much like Dan, it's a fine point, but when I took the survey a week or so ago, one thing I kind of noticed going through that survey and speaking to the objectives and strategies is that, you know, it is kind of a laundry list, and I found pretty good agreement most everything in both the strategies and objectives, but it is kind of a laundry list of good ideas or good things that probably many cities could adopt. And I kind of wondered as I was doing that survey, you know, whether it's the right thing to do or not to be more focused, to kind of do priority one objective, priority two objective, priority three, and strategies, instead of having kind of a shotgun approach to economic development objectives and strategies, is to say, you know, all those are good. In the next 5 years or some period of time, if Springfield's going to succeed and keep the momentum going, it really needs to stay focused on these types of things. And so you sort of prioritize them by category versus just sort of saying, here's a list of everything soup and nuts that we might do or could do or should do in the next 20 years. And I don't know if that's a good idea or not. It just kind of struck me as it, you probably couldn't find much wrong with most of the objectives and the strategies, but we're not going to be able to do all those things likely. And certainly not the beginning of the 20-year period to do all those things. So it's just something just for us to consider when we start packaging at the very end. This list of good ideas.
I guess your point is, at the end, we're going to find that some are more important to do first than others. Okay. Stephen?
I would echo Mike's opinion. I think the brush is way too broad. And I think it's important to focus on, as Mike just said, some sort of hierarchical numbering and approach. And I think that will enable us to focus better and give better advice to whomever this report's going to. I agree with Mike entirely. Everything sounds good, but it sounds like our kids' Christmas list. And I think we need to focus.
That's kind of a general overview kind of comment, but it's not a non-important one, and I want to capture this, because before we leave that general comment, does anyone feel a little bit different or a lot different, Carrie?
I just have a question about, we probably have already talked about this, but the end usage of this document, and if we get too specific in this document, will we end up inadvertently precluding actions in the future by the Planning Commission? Or whomever.
Staff.
Right, and so that's probably one of the most important questions to deal with. We see this as a policy document that will ultimately get adopted into whatever becomes a sprinkled version of its comprehensive plan. And as such, it should be a broad framework. And the way that we typically work with cities on this is they could have this kind of broad brush set of objectives, and then they would have a more detailed implementation plan that would get at Mike's issue of what is first. And, so this is really intended to establish the 20-year vision of things that should happen, but for a number of reasons, we didn't attempt to prioritize them. We just took the input and listed them out, and we probably could be ordered better to two categories. So, I do think if you begin to prioritize them, it does begin to tie staff's hands, I hope everybody in the room understands the kind of opportunistic nature, the dynamic nature of economic development, and how fast things can change. And if you say your priority is to improve redevelopment someplace, and you've got an industry that needs an urban growth boundary expansion to come here and it's a major employer, that could create some conflicts in the land use review process.
Well, what I heard you say, though, is if this is a broad base of general agreement we're going to go through here a little bit quicker than we are right now, but that at some point there is an implementation plan, because what I think a lot of us maybe have a experience is that we're going to come to some general agreement here, but the plan is something that starts to be proactive. And I made this comment, didn't get in here, that the city needs to be much more proactive, let's say, in economic development. This is what we're talking about here. And so an implementation plan, even though it would make allowance for opportunities come, got to jump on that opportunity, but notwithstanding that, what is our plan, 20-year horizon and that kind of thing. So, but I guess what I'm hearing is that is going to come after this. We keep it kind of broad here.
Well, what I would propose, I'm not, Bill Brown probably has a better understanding of this, but this is probably something that needs to be worked out with staff in terms of how they have historically done this. So John Tamron is a person that progresses economic development in the city. And, so I have a person who works closely enough with him to know exactly how he takes this kind of information and turns it into a list of priorities and here's what
so the updated plan for Springfield reads, it's a lot of that is in here right now. The objectives are kind of similar, but I think we're capturing all this discussion, correct? So okay, we're not going to settle everything tonight. But is there, before we leave this, any final comments though about sort of general versus specific kinds of points? So I guess for going through this document, it's going to be pretty general in nature, and so let's look at it that way for now. Any other thoughts before we go to objective two? Okay. Objective two. Provided adequate competitive short-term supply of suitable land to respond to economic development opportunities as they arise. Short-term supply means suitable land that is ready for construction within 1 year of an application for a building permit or request for service extension. Competitive short-term supply means the short-term supply of land provides a range of site sizes and locations to accommodate the market needs of a variety of industrial and other employment uses. One implementation step, target sites where infrastructure is existing or can be provided relatively easily and at low floor cost. Discussion?
Is this a common term that's used for short-term supply? How do you find it here?
Straight out of the coal mine administrative rule.
This is how they term it. Because my casual observation would be, you know, if you have a site that's, you know, you've got an application or you have the ability to apply for a building permit, ready for construction within 1 year, seems like, yeah, very short term. You know, I mean, because you could be building on it today and be done within a year, or be substantially on your way. Whereas request for service extension, oh God, that could take a long time. Thinking of like Jasper Natron or something like that, where you could maybe institute a request for service extension, but maybe a number of factors that could really slow you down considerably beyond a year. Before, you know, and that might be a service extension that's needed before you ever get to some land use approval, before you ever get to a building permit. So, just kind of curious about that.
I'll just make a comment on this one. For a long time, if you've been in this business at all, which you've heard not just here but statewide, is we need shovel-ready sites. And I think that's not a term in here, but my comment that I didn't get to the city, but it was, I don't think that's a phrase that, it would be, I not more descriptive, but the governor's office uses shovel-ready sites. In fact, there's a website that they list those in, and I think what that means to a developer is permits and zoning and a lot of other things, you know, I'm not going to have to go through all this, and shovel-ready means services are there and that kind of thing. So, but it is a huge objective because it's one of the reasons opportunities pass us by all the time. We're just not ready, and a lot of cities in Oregon are in the same boat. It's not a criticism, it's just a fact. So I would, I think we're not going to be done with this one. I don't have any specific suggestions, but this would, if we were prioritizing, this would be way up there because that gives you a fighting chance to attract and the kind of companies you want. Any other comments, Stephen? Anyone?
Just a couple clarifying comments on this. This is kind of a big deal in the context of state policy. I think it's going to be a challenge for Springfield as we go through alternatives analysis, and here's why. There's a requirement in the rule that cities that are within the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which Springfield is, establish policies for competitive short-term supply. And basically what it says, cities and counties subject to this must provide at least 25% of total land supply designated for industrial and unemployment in short-term supply. In other words, 25% of your sites have to meet that definition and be permitted in. We haven't gone through that analysis as we finish up the buildable lands inventory. We'll be in the public works to go over what is in the inventory and have them help us, based on a set of criteria, define what is short-term supply in Springfield. But basically, if the determination is you have to go outside the UDP, you're probably looking at some kind of service extensions to get to having that as short-term supply. And so, that's part of the reason this objective is in here, is because there's a requirement that the city adopt the policy. The target's not in here. There is some language in here that allows the city to adopt a different target, or to basically, the language is that cities and counties that are unable to achieve the target may set an alternative target based on their economic opportunity analysis, or planning area with 10% or more of the total land supply and the Golden Ordnance Industrial Site Certification Program meets the requirements.
So, and that's the program that is talks about shovel-ready. That definition might be helpful to the committee. Don?
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about the short-term ready sites here. Are we going to have an objective around shovel-ready? Because, I mean, I agree with your comment that, you know, as businesses start to look to relocate here, the first thing, at least a lot of them I talk to, are looking for an existing facility that can lease, buy, redevelop. If there's nothing available there, then look for, you know, something that's shovel-ready. If there's nothing there, then short-term. And so it seems like we're kind of we're focused down in the short term, and we're not, I haven't seen any objective as far as shovel ready. We're talking about redeveloping that sort of stuff at the top, but we're kind of missing that middle ground.
I agree totally. I just think that when you take the weight of folks who are inquiring whether, you know, just sort of a one in a million chance that they might come here or you're on a short list, it's almost unanimously that they're not looking for a five-year kind of thing. If you have an existing building, I mean, existing business that wants to expand, the timing thing can go out a lot further because they're doing business. If they're looking for a West Coast location, it's like, I need to be there in a year. But any other comments about this one? I think we're, again, capturing points, I hope so.
I guess I have a financial concern on holding ready properties because it costs quite a bit to get all the utilities there. And then if it isn't developed for 5 years or so, there's a pretty heavy cost to the people that own that.
So that's a good point. So let's say, I guess what you're saying is if you own 30 acres and it was shovel ready and the infrastructure's all put in, you're paying for that infrastructure without any return
and whatever. As the property owner, you share quite heavily in those extensions of the infrastructure.
That's a good point. I don't know a way around that.
This is offered. This is an opportunity for some sort of a, you know, incentive or credit towards those extensions that might.
Well, yeah, maybe. Well, I don't really want the government to get in the middle of my decisions, but there's farm deferral now for people that are using land that is zoned for something more intensive than farm use. They don't have to pay the heavy property taxes. If somebody's intentionally holding land for future development, maybe there's some way that they could have a break.
Good point.
So I think we're probably leaning towards adding some additional language talking about shovel ready or development readiness. And ultimately, we'll have to get you to agree on some kind of target, but I don't think it's productive to have that discussion until we come back with the actual analysis telling you what we think exists in the inventory that would meet the criteria.
That's great. I do appreciate the little bit of reality, Doug. That is true. Okay. Without any hands up, I'm going to go on to objective three. referred to earlier, reserve enough large sites for special developments in industries that require large sites, 20 acres and larger. Implementation steps, designate land for industrial, technical, slash business parks, provide opportunities for development of business clusters for related or complementary businesses. Develop policies that provide flexibility in the commercial use of land on large sites and include development standards to produce attractive development. Develop policies that provide flexibility in the industrial use of land on large sites without an emphasis on aesthetic development standards. Develop policies to discourage subdivision of large sites. Coordinate the provision of large sites across the Eugene-Springfield region with the City of Eugene and state economic development agencies. A lot there. Discussion?
Philip? Just a question about the third one there, without an emphasis on aesthetic development standards. I'm curious, is that, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm thinking like instead the focus would be on kind of performance-based standards or outcomes-based, kind of like Springfield's done to get in the campus industrial area. We're retooling the code so the focus is upon, you know, making sure you don't have polluting industries or that you, whatever other kind of standards you want to establish. It's more performance-based and it's just kind of that. Just purely aesthetic. Is that kind of the intent?
It could be, I think, part of the interpretation of the comment that somebody wrote.
Somebody said is that we should have different standards for how this development looks between commercial and industrial. So the industrial might be less pretty
in the requirements.
No landscaping requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's exactly implemented. I always want to get your idea there.
A couple of examples that come to mind, Weyerhaeuser or the two resin companies right now. Resin companies especially, there's no way to mask. It's a heavy industrial kind of use. And if we had an opportunity to bring somebody like that on board, it would just, there's some things you can do to offset the look of a sort of real factory setting, but that's what it is. So. Is that what's meant? Is it sort of from the comment? Mm-hmm. Does anybody want to hold up to the comment and explain it? That person must not be here. I think that's the sense of it, is that we wouldn't just out of hand say no to a company because they have a smokestack or a...
Well, but what this is saying, if it stays in this way, is they don't have to plant any buffers or anything else between their property and the roadway. You're reducing economic barriers because you're not forcing a greening of the perimeter of the property, is how this could be interpreted. And if you're assuming all of this development's within the UGB, then you better think about whether... That's really a good idea.
Nuclear
incinerator. Okay. I don't know that. Yeah. I think that's a very good idea.
The interpretation of it's really important, and this clearly needs some massaging and meeting or discussion if people are comfortable with it.
Well, and I think that's where I was trying to get to, is that if you focus instead on performance standards and whatever metric you may use, and it could be beauty is one of them, I don't know how you want to define that, or it's some measurable thing of more than how many parts per zillion, something, I don't know. But, those probably should be the thing that rather than something truly subjective. So, or some agreed upon subjective standard. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Before we move on, just this is where the devil's in the details. Develop policies discourage subdivision of large sites, so you're a private landowner, you have 30 acres, and what are those policies? Are they going to discourage me from subdividing that? Maybe something I'd like to know in the future, but it's not going to be spelled out here for us tonight. But I think another way of putting that is have policies that encourage the preservation of sites large enough to entertain. And really, when you have 20 acre sites, it's not a large site, really. We've had inquiries in the last month of folks who need 250. 300 acres and 1,000 employees, and we're just not in the ballgame for that. But anyway, there's a way to turn that around into a positive kind of thing.
Can I make another comment on that? I think there's two things that happen that tend to be of concern to communities in this, and one is the subdivision of those large sites and smaller sites that moves out certain types of industries. The other one is the conversion of sites that might be designated for industrial or certain uses into something else. And so the standard thing that we see a lot of is conversion of industrial sites for commercial uses.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's an issue or whether it's important enough, but it's a fairly common objective or some cases that pursuits to take to say, we are going to have some sites that are reserved for industrial, we're going to make it part of it.
More like a zoning issue there.
Yeah.
Any other comment? Oh, Carrie.
So under the first bullet, we're designating industrial parks, but under the bullet we're talking about now, we don't want all large parcels divided up into industrial parks. We want some that stay very large, mm-hmm. as opposed to allowing the owner to make them into an industrial park, which would preclude large acreage needs.
Yeah, and so in the hierarchy of site needs, what we will come out with is there's going to be a need for some very large sites to accommodate large industries, but there will also be a need for sites that can be subdivided into things that would need more than attention at first bullet. And so that's a different building type, and it's a different site need. They may look the same when you start with them.
Okay, and the other thing before we go on is there's a lot of history. It's kind of a shot in the dark for 20 years, but cities around us in our own city have our growth pattern from the last 20 years, and Gateway is a perfect example, and redevelopment, and there's some going on in the Mohawk and downtown area, Glenwood as well. So I think all you have to do is go back 20 years and say, well, if we were sitting here 20 years in the past, and we were looking forward 20 years, and this is before anything really was popping in Gateway, just before then. I mean, what kind of decisions would we make? And that all could have ended up being very cut up. Some people would say it was already, but anyway.
Carrie? So before we just leave Objective 3, can we go back to the aesthetic development clause? Couldn't that bullet read, couldn't it have a period after large sites so that we're just saying there needs to be some flexibility, but we aren't in this document including aesthetic development as being what we're talking about? Because there are a lot of areas where flexibility might be needed, but this is going to, I see this as creating a potential problem. Because it's going to be interpreted as perimeter landscaping, what the built-out environment looks like, and maybe that was the intent of it, but we haven't heard anybody advocate for that, and I'm opposed to it. So
for you, you would say, let's
leave the first line, but
yeah, let's not memorialize the idea that
we're talking about aesthetics. We are encouraging some flexibility in the policies, because there are a lot of different kinds of uses that might come in, but
it's so subjective. You know, what it's one person's aesthetics would be another person's kind of thing. I mean, I know what you're saying. But anybody else have a comment on that, Mike?
Well, I agree with Carrie. I think that we're trying to paint a big brush here. We're already kind of being kind of specific towards one issue of landscape and aesthetics. And although, on the other side of that coin, I do think it's important. So a reader 6 months from now that reads our report, to get an idea of what we're trying to do, not to just be so broad that if you read ours versus Eugene's or anybody else, you really couldn't tell much difference. And I think that we need to be more specific. At one time in Springfield's history, any job was a good job, any kind of job at all. And then, there are different communities that we kind of focus on green jobs or family wage jobs or other kind of things. And so I don't want to be kind of general, but I still think they'll read when we get through this document and a pretty good idea of what we're trying to do as a community here.
I just wouldn't want somebody to come back and say, well, this group told us that they don't care about buffers. Right. Because I don't think we are saying that. I'm not saying you have to have a buffer either. We're not saying that if we take that line out. We're just not saying that they don't matter, which I think this says.
I think this is saying what you're saying without changing it. It says to let development happen without an emphasis on standards.
Without an emphasis on aesthetic development standards. Well, I guess I would be a proponent of flexibility. I'm less of a proponent about doing away with aesthetics. There's something about aesthetics that appeal to me. So I wouldn't want to specify that I care not about them in the document.
So would you be as uncomfortable if it read with an emphasis on aesthetics? You'd be okay with that, but
no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be in that
position. What about just with flexibility towards
Johnny?
Aesthetics means a lot of stuff. And I think Springfield, as far as the Springfield, when we're building, we go through the permitting process. We really watch the landscaping very closely. I don't think we have any ugly landscaping per se, but I see what you're saying.
This
I don't
say
think,
that we're encouraging them to have ugly landscaping.
Well, I don't read it as that directly, but I think they're just trying to make it more flexible. I don't think they'll let them get away with doing something ugly.
Coming back to you, Johnny, down the road, buddy. He's a really ugly
one. I think the point is we're calling out the aesthetics, right? I mean, of all the things we could pick on, we're calling out the aesthetics
exactly.
as a thing to pick on here, and it shouldn't be that.
Right.
So it should be without emphasis on current development standards instead of saying aesthetics. Or maybe there's some way of saying that we're going to be flexible and willing to work with them on the current standards without calling out.
I think, but we're going to move on here because we won't be getting done. I think one way to look at this is you could have two identical plants and their industrial plants, and there could be one that is just real stark and no effort there at all, and the other one is the same plant with some nod toward aesthetics. And you can have two malls that way. In fact, you can see the Gateway Mall before they were forced to do some aesthetics, and then with aesthetics, just two different things. So. But we're going to, can we put that in the parking lot and come back to that, because, and let the record show, we stumbled on the word aesthetics. I'm pretty proud of it. Okay, we're going to move on, and we're going to come back to it, because it's in the park that one for a minute. Objective 4, maintain existing types and levels of industrial and other employment uses in Springfield. One bullet, develop and implement an outreach strategy to determine opportunities for the city to assist existing businesses in Springfield. Does that make a lot of sense? Okay, I'm going to move on. Number 5, encourage employers to locate in downtown Springfield where appropriate. Bullets there, develop policies to promote infill and redevelopment in downtown, provide the infrastructure and services that businesses need to operate in downtown, develop programs to promote investments in existing buildings to make downtown more attractive. And going into the next page, develop a grand boulevard on East Main, which would include arterial traffic in center lanes, local traffic on outside lanes separated by sidewalks and street trees. Finally, develop a marketing strategy to attract businesses to downtown Springfield, including providing low-cost assistance for businesses moving to downtown. Yeah, more than I thought was there. Any discussion?
I think I'm probably in agreement with all of them except for the second to last one about building grand boulevards.
About it. What do you think?
I mean, I think the others are very, you know, I guess, short term or doable, you know, as far as creative policy about infill, encouragement there and whatnot. But building a grand boulevard, I think it's more of a, maybe something that's a long term strategy, but it seems like today you're taking out a lot of current infill and creating that.
Who's going to pay for it?
A lot of issues around it in my mind. I'm just thinking the logistics around it, the time, the cost.
There's one thing, it's kind of already, I mean, I don't know if the term Grand Boulevard is going to be descriptive of what ends up being it, but it's kind of a long-term effort on ODOT's part, because it is a state highway. But this is indeed what we're talking about, too. Tweak all of the sort of curb cuts and entry points, and as you redevelop a piece of property and you have 3 curb cuts, you might end up with one or none because of the state. ODOT's standard is 740 feet, which is longer than a city block. So we have a kind of a, I think what this is about is kind of redoing what is that long stretch from when you leave downtown to, I guess, Thurston. Is it something we want to keep in here? It sounds almost like a traffic thing.
I think it might be a little bit more broad than that. Some work that, like Dylan did on the Franklin corridor, uses some concept of the Grand Boulevard. So I think the idea is that we're turning to some, you have 2 lanes and you have local access roads and you're turning to some higher density.
Yeah, there's a term for like multi-boulevard. Other problem is it's not really considered downtown, the area that's been described here. I guess I'd like to think we come back and take another look at that one. Philip, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I was going to say it's not really downtown. Yeah,
okay, any other comments before we leave? Lee, are you caught up to where we are? Page 3. Okay. Objective 6, encourage redevelopment of Glenwood with a mixed-use employment and housing center. Strategies, develop policies to promote redevelopment in Glenwood and provide the infrastructure and services that businesses need to operate in Glenwood.
You have an economic development agency that has jurisdiction, some jurisdiction within Conway. And it seemed like, you know, that whatever we're going to put in there about Glenwood ought to be coordinated with CETA's plan for Glenwood, with some reference to CETA's goals for Glenwood versus having, you know, something different or something more general.
Okay.
Just a preface in there, in coordination with the Economic Development Agency.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. All right. We'll talk a lot about that when we talk about infill and density. I know it's going to be a prime area that we study, that's for sure. Objective 7, recruit businesses that pay higher than average wages for the region, as reported by Oregon Employment Department. Strategies here, implementation, that is, capitalize on exemplary public facilities to attract vibrant people and enterprises. Develop and implement a business marketing strategy to attract businesses with high-wage jobs. Coordinate development of the strategy, local and state economic development agencies must be with local. And ask residents what types of businesses they would like to locate in Springfield.
To what end? To what end?
We need to raise your hand. What was your question?
That last one, it just strikes me as to what end. Asking people what they'd like to have was nice, but the end result is you kind of get what you get.
Okay. Well, this is one of the comments that I made. I don't quite agree with it. I do think that one thing that's lacking is, if you're going to put your hands on the wheel and try to drive it, I do think there's some value in having, not citizens just kind of say, I'd like to have Six Flags over Springfield or something, but there's going to be segments of the economy that fit our city better than others. And I think and there will be segments of the economy that we're more competitive to go out and try to get than others. You know, we're not going to have a shrimp fishery here, for example. But I do agree that a lot of stuff comes your way and you can't see it coming, but I think if we went out and were proactive and spent $100,000 a year trying to lure a company that would strengthen, diversify, or fit into your kind of community, it's well worth the effort. Phil?
Just a suggestion, and this may kind of be redundant with other objectives, but I'd suggest maybe after the word recruit, put and retain businesses that pay higher wages, and if you can. And then under the first bullet, capitalize on exemplary public facilities and existing businesses or industry clusters to attract vibrant people and enterprises. So you try to build upon your own strength, what you have here, whether recruiting somebody or expanding an existing business or industry.
Karen?
I'm just curious about the overall objective. Did you guys have a discussion about this objective last time, because the survey doesn't indicate that anybody thinks we should be proactively recruiting anything. It says we should be accommodating. So how did we decide that, and who's going to do this if it's in this plan? What actually happens if this objective is in here? It's a placeholder, so that if the city wants to proactively recruit, it's covered under this, or this just seems like a completely different objective than everything else we're talking about. So, and when I look on urban development on the survey results on page 4, 75.9% of the people who responded to the survey thought the city should be accommodating growth versus encouraging it, which was 13%. So how'd we get here?
The objective came from the Michigan City Council.
Okay.
So
then what happens?
Well, let me try to answer that. We already have an agency whose main charge is to do this, but you know, you can. People have a lot of different opinions about whether they really are or other things are happening, but it's quite common. You know, you have SEDCOR in Salem, you've got a couple of agencies in the southern part of the state, very proactive about bringing particular things, and then when things come their way, and we could talk to this much more than I could, you know, responding to or not responding to things, and so you're accommodating, and you know, if you're going to be accommodating, you're actually going to be proactively recruiting or not recruiting, or looking at opportunities and saying that's not for us, or this is, and you have to maybe spend some resources,
right,
because it's worthwhile.
Well, I'm totally for economic development since it's my entire, I'm totally into economic development through recruiting since it is my entire life. I just didn't understand how it got here on the basis of what I saw, having not been in the room last time and reading through the materials, so I just want us to be conscious about what we're
doing. I don't think it's inconsistent with the survey results. I think this is more of a targeted economic development approach than it is a recruitment approach. So a recruitment approach would be, I think, much more aggressive than what this indicates. It's a fairly ubiquitous objective. There probably is, I can't remember, I don't have the metro objectives in front of me, but it probably is in the metro plan policies right now, and a lot of these objectives were derived from existing objectives in the metro plan, the ones that are already codified.
Lee, that is such a loaded word to recruit, though. It might be better to encourage location growth businesses. It becomes such a flashpoint every time you get in a debate we're having.
But I'm happy now, Lee.
Huh? You're happy?
We'll capture all those. So it's a place where one word can make a lot of difference. Any other comments on that objective before we move to the next? Well, the word encourage does start us off. Encourage local residents to develop skills and other educational attributes that enable them to obtain existing jobs. Under that, improve the quality of education and strengthen the K-12 school system. And target recruitment of businesses that provide workforce training and education.
Not that I oppose that first one, but it seems to be a loaded presumption that it's not accurate. I mean, if there's something that's different that people want that's specific, it has to happen.
This is the K-12.
The K-12 piece.
Dot.
I think there could be a lot of improvement because I'm really frustrated with the quality of education that our kids get. It's like one teacher at a convention said, how much is enough? My daughter is in a higher math grade and she is drowning, but she's still expected to do that. And like somebody else told me, they said, you know what? Most of these kids are not gonna be rocket scientists. Why are they expected to learn what those individuals would need to know? She comes home and she says that she's not learning anything in her Spanish class, that it's really not expanding the knowledge that she needs to know. And there's just, I don't like the fact that the teachers are overworked. I don't like the fact that I read in the newspaper that they're focusing more on testing than learning. Okay, that kind of worries me that, you know, how can you focus on testing when you're not even teaching our kids what they really need to know? I think some of the requirements now that they force on the teachers and our kids is just way out of line and going the wrong direction, and I see that just bursting wide open and saying, okay, wow, how do we get here? Because I think a lot of times our kids are not being taught what they really need to be prepared for in the economic future of what they're going to be doing.
And I think maybe one way to also kind of put that is this. A story about Tupelo, Mississippi, which is famous for what? Elvis was born there. But they had a horrible economic downturn. They lost the textile industry that basically supported the majority of the city. And the only thing they had intact was a very good K-12 education system. And when consultants came down to try to resurrect this dead city, they said, that's the only horse alive in your city. Let's ride it for all it's worth. And what they did, and maybe it's a little wordsmithing here, but they tried to say, we are going to have a K-12 system that is as responsive as possible to the future workforce needs of our kids. And that gives them a target out there that's sort of a positive incentive. And you know, I think Lee's also right. The schools are always trying to do better, and I think they should. But that's been a real success story. And they had only one asset left in the whole city. And they're a great powerhouse in the South. Sorry?
If we said support quality education in Springfield's K-12, could it work both ways where it is an incentive to continue improvement and it recognizes quality in those instances where it exists? Because I don't know that the city can force that issue completely anyway.
I'm not saying that there's not quality there. I just feel that it's going the wrong direction. And I've read in the paper already that some of the qualities that our state government expects our kids to have, even some of the teachers said, some of these kids are just going to flat out drown. Because they can't, I probably couldn't be doing algebra and trigonometry. It's just not where my head's at. But yet they would expect me to know all that stuff. To me, it's not reasonable. It's not where our focus should be for our kids. They should be more diverse in kind of giving them more of everything.
Mike.
I think it's worse than the most solid. I've been even substituting some teacher time where it has been improved. I think the point needs to be in there, just a matter of what word we use. You know, I spent a lot of time tonight, but I would suggest enhance.
Brianna?
I agree. The education system focuses, they seem to focus too much on testing and like reading, writing, arithmetic, all the knowledge things and how well you do on the tests and whatnot. But then, like, I think this next year, there's like at least 9 classes my school is cutting, and like a bunch of the health occupations classes, and it seems like there's nothing to focus on the classes that teach you things for the real world that are possible careers, and it's just like too focused on testing and whatnot. And then you get in the real world, and testing isn't going to be what helps you survive and get on in life. It's those other skills that, you know, I don't feel they give us enough of.
I bet you a Sacred Heart will help fund getting those classes back.
Well, part of the problem is, frankly, is the attitude towards a lot of these non-professional classes that are no longer offered. I mean, Springfield still has a reasonable MELA program compared to 4J, but their participation has dropped dramatically. And a lot of it is, you know, I'm in the metal industry, and I'll tell you right now, the emphasis is our society would rather produce doctors and lawyers and accountants and insurance salesmen than manufacturing people. That's a trend. Mm-hmm. And we can't get kids interested in this. We allow job shadowing. Anytime I have a young man from Springfield, first in call, we invite them over, they come over and do job shadowing and everything else. I think this year I had 5 all year. Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, I'd have 20 or 30. So it's a combination. It's a cultural thing. It's a social thing. And, you know, schools can only take the classes as soon as you're willing to take.
That's true. I think if we... let's come back to this, because I think it's obviously everyone has a vested interest, and my kids just went through, and Brianna's in school, and we have kids in school, and I think in the context of future economic development, if we can have a little tiny conversation out in the future and say, what's the potential for K-12 to have a positive impact on workforce readiness and in Springfield in general, we may come to a statement or two that really gets to what their role is. Phil, last comment on this?
Just, you know, the second bullet there about workforce training and education, and, you know, it just seems like the emphasis shouldn't be solely upon K-12 education. Really, it's LCC and the workforce training that they provide. It's a fundamental part of growing our local economy. And I think this bullet here about targeting recruitment of businesses that provide that, in my mind, more often than not, businesses are going to want to come in and have people ready to go, and they're looking for a trained up, ready to go workforce. So it's almost like you really need to look for the business partnership with existing businesses and or with those institutions, LCC, or whomever, maybe to provide those skills that are needed for the businesses that are coming into town, or otherwise for retooling and re-educating and retraining people.
Don.
I know you had the last comment, but So I agree with Phil's comments exactly. That's what I'd say is let's not be, I think this needs to be here. We need to encourage. We cannot going to solve the problem with a statement like this. I know we can wordsmith it to it works, but I think it needs to go past K-12. And it's, you know, a lot of businesses I talk to, they're looking at the, you know, the available land here, but they're also looking at the workforce here. And they're making their location decision on what is available workforce as well as, you know, policies and processes in place. And, you know, then, so, yeah, I think across the spectrum, then you got to look at some of the basics. I mean, bring in an employee that can work the alarm clock, not spit on the sidewalk on the way in, hold the door for the person behind them, I'm probably going to hire them.
Yeah.
Because I think some of the, you know, the basics are missing, and whether that comes through K-12 or just some sort of a slap in the back of the head school, you know, I think we need to focus on, you know, what type of skills we need for the, mm-hmm. for the workforce at the family wage job that we're targeting.
Just a couple of comments, and we're going to have to move on, but, you know, when our former governor sent out a blue ribbon business group, large and small employers, and sent them all over the state and talked to people about what do we need to be ready, what skills do we need to be ready for the 21st century, this whole thing, and they spent a whole year and talked to a lot of different kinds of companies, and they came back, and they said, Governor, it's like, get up on time, get to work on time, sober, team player, good communication skills, and we'll teach them the rest. The world is changing too fast. But I do see sometimes what I've seen at LCC, let's say you have a hospitality cluster here, and if we didn't have some of the, we don't have enough training, but if that is your cluster, you need to have an educational component. What I hear from Invitrogen and other places is that we cannot find the scientists to work here. There's no program bringing those skills. With auto repair, there's no auto repair people to draw from, they're all gone. So in some ways, you got to look at your economy and say, where's the education component? You always have to go outside your region to get talent. You're going to eventually lose that business, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and go on, because if we're going to come back to this...
We're coming back to this. Okay. Objective 9 is increasing potential for employment in one of the regional industrial clusters. Clusters including communication equipment, information technology, software, metals, wholesalers, processed food and beverage, wood and forest products, transportation equipment.
Medical should be on there.
Okay. Under implementation steps, provide the services, infrastructure, and land needed to attract these types of businesses. Designate land for industrial technology business parks to provide opportunities for development of business clusters for related or complementary businesses. Seek opportunities for development of other industry clusters. Coordinate development of business clusters with other cities, economic development agencies in the Springfield area. And that is that. Discussion about clusters. Stephen.
I think there's one other part that should be on there, and that is on the fat pipe for the city. Access available to all citizens and employers, because going forward, I think the neighborhood approved, moving information is going to be critical. So I think if the city can get behind in some fashion, getting a good backbone that's reliable, I think that would be a huge attraction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well noted. Up there. Any other discussion about these points? Does everybody believe in clusters? It's not a debate about whether it's worthwhile even pursuing, or they come, they go, it's how much time are you going to put into that. Does everybody understand what a cluster is, the definition of that?
No.
Why don't you give us 30 seconds on what you would define when things become concentrated enough that it becomes a cluster. What's it look like when it's a cluster?
It looks like our RV manufacturing sector, where you have a number of industries that are working with the same labor pool and find economies of scale that exist, both in terms of the production function, but also in terms of their sales and distribution. One of the elements of the cluster is that there are related industries that begin to spin off of that and support those clusters. So that's kind of the concept there. If you recall back to our meeting in probably May, we gave you a chart that showed you the city clusters and some of the clusters in this region. And really what we focused on in this were the ones that seem to be high growth and faster increasing rate.
Okay, thanks.
Lee? Yes, medical as well as this is a small medical cluster here, but it's regional for that. To some degree, software, and research. I mean, there's quite a bit of research here, social science research. I mean, not so much here, but in the area, social science research is a big factor, probably a couple thousand jobs.
to answer your question, yes, I do believe in them. And look at Route 128, the Silicon Valley, Bellevue, and I think empirical evidence is overwhelming that they exist.
And I agree, because I think we have a cluster or critical mass, or whatever you want to call it, it tends to recruit that sort of skill set to the area and retain it. And because I hear a lot of someone may look at our industry and say, well, I have a choice of going to Springfield or Silicon Valley. Springfield, if I don't like it, I can't just walk down the street and get a similar job. Silicon Valley, I could. And so once you have a cluster, they know that if it doesn't work out in this player, I've got 10 others to choose from. And that cluster, I think, more likely to recruit, bring people into the area, and just the mindset. You know, you start to think that way when you're growing up, or recruiting people in or relocating, you start thinking in that cluster.
Can't you leave yourself vulnerable, though, on a downturn? What really are the issues?
Yeah,
well, all of a sudden, we're losing all the jobs left and right. You've got all that, you know, out of Holberg area, and all of a sudden, cluster gets hit. And you've got some real issues.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that there, whether that be the, you know, wood products or RV or whatever the case may be. You can't put all your eggs in the basket, but you can't spread yourself, you can't peanut butter yourself across the entire world, too. So I think there's, you know, the size of cluster that probably makes sense, but you've got to have multiple clusters and multiple industries.
Mike?
Just a comment. I think clustering, I think, is a good concept. I just know from experience that when you recruit the first one of a cluster and it's new to the area, there's a lot of hoopla about it, a lot of good for us. It may go to the second one sometimes, but the third one, those first two, sort of come back and say, why are you recruiting, you know, my competitor? Because when that person moves in, they take my specialists, and I lose employment to that new person that maybe offered better wages. So they, what attracts them sometimes, you know, they sort of come back to those agencies that are going to recruitment and say, I know you're trying to create a cluster here, but you're actually creating competition for a limited workforce, and I'm not sure that's good in this area. So just a comment.
I'm going to suggest one other implementation. It was from when Ted Kulongowski came to Hynix, I say that. At the very beginning of his term, he had an economic development meeting there, and Invitrogen was still, previous name?
Molecular
Probes. And there was a general manager there from Ireland who was kind of facilitating the next phase and moving that along. And he told the governor, what you don't have here, you know, people talk about infrastructure and roads, sewers, and that land, and he said, what you don't have here is the infrastructure for the kinds of people that are going to work here culturally. There weren't the kinds of things they wanted to do, and, you know, because we're going to go to a bigger city generally to recruit, and I don't think his comment really fell on any fertile ground, but it was kind of like in our city. And the quality of life for recruitment is not a small point. A lot of choices are being made out there. You could go to Gary, Indiana, you could go to Springfield, Oregon. The differences are huge. And so I think part of the thing would be a strategy to continue to have really good quality of life, because you're moving people, not just buildings and infrastructure. So.
Can you get a Guinness one time?
We need a Guinness factory here, not just Guinness. Doesn't travel well. Okay, good discussion there. Objective 10, encourage development of healthcare-related services. There you go. To complement the Peace Health development in the Gateway area.
Under that, special objective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Under that, re-examine land use policies in the Gateway area and, if necessary, modify the policies to promote development of medical and other employment that requires office space.
Well, you know, I know there's another objective down here about facilities and services, and it seems to me that, you know, what needs to be added here is something regarding infrastructure to support future development. And, you know, approving the public library and high-speed internet access, for, I think Stephen talked about, and that's great, but, you know, I think there are fundamentals that are needed for future growth of this medical cluster, too, and that relates to transportation infrastructure and availability of water for future growth as the Gateway area grows. So, you know, I think there's just some fundamentals that are going to need to accompany that, as, you know, there have been some large employers that have looked at the area are pretty impressed with the new facility that's being developed here, but we don't have enough land available to grow that cluster with a complementary type industry here right now. So what it's gonna take is probably some kind of land availability and the infrastructure that supports it.
Listen, we also have power issues.
Sure.
Can't tell you how many burnouts we get.
Really?
Someone agree.
Any other comments on this objective? I think this would be one where we examine land use policies and, if necessary, modify will be more finely written, you know, sometime down the road, because I don't know exactly what that means. I think we've looked at land use policies a lot in the Gateway area. So, you know, we've written a lot of things. Philip?
Well, and it's not just really, you know, things that require office space. I mean, you know, I think this community generally is not yet understanding really how big a deal this new medical center is going to be to this region. And what, you know, we'll probably have a teaching hospital within 5 years. And we have the ability, I think, to really grow in bioscience-related industries in Eugene and Springfield in a much bigger way than we've had the ability to do in the past. So,
you've obviously had discussions. There's limitations on how much land is in Kinsey Gateway. There's some limited potential to move more there, but not a lot. Is the Glenwood area too far?
No, I think really, you know, the cluster could be virtually everywhere in Eugene Springfield. So it doesn't have to be on the Riverbank campus by any means, or even in the existing UGB. It can be Glenwood, it can be in North Eugene, it can be near the university.
It
can be at Hynix. Yeah, right. So that'd be great. So I mean, Invitrogen is really kind of an associated type.
We may have these other buildings available not too far from here.
But, you know, I think that's part of what the redevelopment of the Sacred Heart campus in Eugene is intended to try and leave an empty chair that we can grow on that campus as well. So, you know, it's a mix and match thing that our whole region should try and explore.
So one thing that this thing calls to my mind is when we start getting down to cases about what's still available, and you have a place like Gateway, and you have an emerging cluster, you need to be pretty proactive about, you know, taking care about what you infill the rest of the land with. When folks, you know, if you're going to foster a cluster, you've got to provide that, and that means sometimes having some covenants about what's going to go in. Yes, sir.
Well, the comments I made in the survey regarding this medical cluster, because we'll have an existing campus. Assuming they go other places, where that other place may be, there's a big hole in the middle of the city here that was medically related, could be in the future medically related, if we could work with, you know, whoever owns McKenzie Malana now, and kind of, you know, look at the redevelopment plans for that whole area. It could be part of this medical cluster that Phil talks about.
Well, it comes in return, but it's a nice facility. It could be a nice facility. Mm-hmm. It's already plumbed for all of that, and maybe it would need to be updated.
You got a point?
Well, there's also, you know, we keep coming back to this cluster idea. And of course, I think what drives clusters, or at least, are very, very successful companies that are committed to the community. We went out, I'm saying Lane County in general, and out after successful companies worldwide that weren't necessarily committed to Oregon. They came in and took advantage of tax and other benefits and everything else, and basically generated their profit, made their money, and got the heck out of town. And I think you've got to be careful that when you start recruiting or trying to build clusters that aren't created because of what we are here, you get yourself in trouble.
I think, just to comment on that, if you create the kind of atmosphere where the cluster is more tightly, you know, connected to your community.
Tied to the community.
Yeah, and I think sometimes if the community doesn't try to do that, the pasture's a little greener on the other side, you jump over there, and, you know, but there's things that communities do and create a kind of cluster environment
is unique. Silicon Valley is one of them. They've got capital venture and all that kind of stuff, and they wouldn't, a lot of people would leave and expand, and but a lot of people wouldn't because what they need is there. And I think we haven't done a real good job of providing the answers to the need and kind of anchoring those companies. Natural resource companies, we've got a long history of that. You know, that's where the trees are. So that's it's going to be a very interesting discussion on clusters. Without any other comments, we're going to plow through and get done here on a timely fashion. Objective 11, increase the potential for convention and tourist-related economic activities. Under that, capitalize on existing activities that attract visitors, such as outdoor recreational opportunities or craft events in Eugene. Develop policies that maintain Springfield's environment quality and natural beauty. Somehow that doesn't work. Last one, encourage development of a public meeting and convention facility in Springfield. That all seems to make sense. I say under the third bullet, as soon as possible.
And it's actually kind of related to what we've just been talking about, too.
Yeah.
Because we have an opportunity to do some wonderful things here with this health services cluster growing and the research going on at the University of Oregon. And if we're successful around this whole track, the sport physiology work that's being done, it's going to really be the epicenter of some pretty outstanding learning opportunities, which brings a lot of people around the world. So I'd love to see it connected to everything that's going on.
I don't really see a way to improve outdoor recreational opportunities because we have such a wide, diverse range of things that we could all do. I don't think there's anything that I know of that you cannot do anywhere in Oregon. I mean, you can pretty much do it all. So I personally disagree with that. You can't go better than what we already have, in my opinion.
Which one says we're going to make it better?
Well, they said capitalize on existing activities that attract visitors, such as outdoor recreational opportunities. I think mostly people already know what they have. I see advertisements for Oregon recreation in magazines and stuff like that. So if that's what they're talking about, yeah. But as far as improving what we already have, I don't think you can.
I think a better word there is enhance. And so if we made the bike path connection that took it all the way out to Mount Pisgah, and we already have
great.
And it would be better. I mean, it would attract people because it would be a singular kind of thing that we'd get a reputation for. So I think maybe a better word is not improve, but enhance, because obviously we have
but
outstanding.
But I think when it says capitalize, it means leveraging, get people to come here and spend money in our hotels and restaurants while they're hiking on our trails.
Yes.
It's leveraging that wonderful asset that you're recognizing that we have. I might change track events, though, to organize sporting events, because I think it really...
More expansive?
Yeah, and it's not just in Eugene. There's going to be some organized sporting events in Springfield, too, so...
Yeah. Okay. We're organizing as well. There's been a couple of comments by economic development consultants who have come in to say that with lack of assembly space and gateway, we are in danger of having people seek other places to go to do the trainings and large employment employer and employee meetings and that kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons we keep pushing for that, because we think that is one of those anchors where you're not very far from a place to go and take care of a lot of business without having a lot of travel and all that kind of thing. So we have to beat that up on that. Okay, we're moving on to objective 12, increase the potential for employment in industries related to information technology. Under that, target high technology firms for recruitment to Springfield, provide the services, infrastructure, and land needed to attract high technology businesses, and designate land for technology or business parks to provide opportunities for development of high tech firms. Nobody's against it. Don, I ask you a question. How can you, you're a high-tech firm in a lot of definitional ways, you know, you fit that. How would you say a community like Springfield could take concrete steps to attract more businesses like Symantec?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, some of the infrastructure, having, you know, high-speed internet connections, because our work is really based on infrastructure. High-speed internet, telephony, that sort of stuff. And next is the employee base. You know, we depending on time of year and how many people we're bringing here, we struggle with the labor pool. And so having a ready labor pool that's expanding, that we're known for, that we easily recruit, bring people in the area, benefits us. And that would be one of the reasons we haven't expanded faster than we have, trying to keep pace with the labor pool. And then I think there is really just transportation. We struggle with the transportation that we have here.
Airport.
Yeah, airport transportation. We don't do a lot of shipping and sort of stuff. We just get people coming out. Because we're a global company, we need to get our people out to other places, see customers, meetings, that sort of stuff, and bring people back in. So for us, it's local infrastructure, labor pool, transportation.
Workforce training partnership between Symantec and Ontario High School.
Targeted high school?
Or post-secondary.
Yeah, I think it's secondary. Like I said, for us, it's both ends of the spectrum. One is that basic, you know, workforce etiquette, and then we can train all of the other stuff. But on the other end, that we do have, you know, we have entry-level jobs, but we also have highly technical jobs. And so there's, you know, whether it's trade school or, you know, community college or university sort of post-education, this is important for us. We do a lot of promote from within. We bring people in entry-level, and we try to give them job growth and training and build the skill set around it. But then the other times, that's a new function coming here, and we just need to, you know, we're late to market. We need to get them running fast, and we need to find that skill that's already developed and bring it in. And so I think whether it's a partnership with local, education institutions, or it gets back to that critical mass or cluster that people are willing to relocate here with the skills that we need in this area. It seems like, for the most part, once we recruit people, we relocate them and get them here, they stay, right? So it isn't the, you know, retainment or attrition is not an issue for us. It's more of convincing them to come here, in a lot of cases, come to a lower wage community from something like Silicon Valley, understand the benefits of the community, understand the quality of life and the economics around this community. And once you convince them that and they come, we've got it. They don't want to move out.
So,
do we need a training and education bullet specifically in this, under this objective?
I think that is a need. I don't think we're going to get much further if we have to continually. I mean, Symantec's just one bit. You know, a lot of these other companies say the same thing. You know, they have a specialist. They don't exist here. There's not a program for them. You know, maybe we should build a conference center / high-tech training center. We call it the Symantec Conference Center. And Don, let's start working on that. But I do believe that in all, just like nobody's going into metals. I mean, if you starve an industry if you don't have a steady stream of qualified and ready to go and good attitudes and come to work every day kind of people. Okay, so we captured that, did we? Okay, almost done here. Number 13, encourage neighborhood commercial uses as appropriate in low-density residential areas, and there's no bullet point under there, so a little guidance, staff, from staff?
Well, I think we might tie this into transplant, the mobile-related exists. I think the one thing that is a potential pitfall of these kinds of things is you try and put too much of it out there, and it just isn't enough to make it work. So we're certainly comfortable wrapping something up.
Cool.
I think you could maybe collapse even 13 and 14 kind of together. You're talking about really sort of the mixed-use concept, whether it's, you know, horizontally in a neighborhood or on a particular site.
Makes sense. Mike?
Maybe Bill can help us out on this, but at least a few years ago, Springfield had a bunch of requirements for transplant regarding nodes. And this one has kind of a node orientation, and it's not mentioned, so I don't know what it should be or something.
We still have that.
Okay. Are we on schedule from behind, or?
Oh, my God, I think like four more visitors, don't we?
They haven't started development yet.
Sure, Ben.
relative.
Okay.
Although Riverbend hasn't been designated yet. Downtown, Glenwood. Move on.
Just seeing the transportation. Related to Flint Coast, where you work and stuff like that, it has some reference to these things. And no requirements of the same.
Okay, does everybody know what nodal development is? And that's a statewide requirement. Now, can we get a 30-second primer on nodal development and how it's going to fit into, because that's what we're really talking about here in essence.
I think I can say that nodal development as an alternative to meeting our goal 12 obligation to reduce trips has not been as effective as $4.50 gas.
Fancy plenaries for saying mix commercial and residential together.
As it turns out, a lot of the nodes that got designated or identified in transplanted Eugene Springfield already existed.
Yeah.
There's a little more to it. The concept is to have actual mixed use rather than vertical mixed use rather than as much horizontal mixed use. But the notion is to have services out.
Could we make Philip's point, just so we can move on and finish, with Objective 13 be a bullet point under Objective 14 as a encouragement?
That's a good idea.
Not to lose the thought, because it's a little variation, but I think it, number 14 is a little bit more kind of toward nodal mixed-use development kind of language. Does that work? Everybody?
Yeah.
Comfortable with that?
Sure.
Yeah. Now, Objective 14, we should have some discussion around this one. Encourage opportunities for employment close to residences, including mixed-use development. Under that, adopt policies that will create more affordable housing or houses, and promote development of multifamily housing. What do we think of that? Carrie, you're all...
Well, they don't seem to really support the objective. They seem to... Actually, you could make affordable housing objective 13 if you wanted, but they don't seem to... Your idea of making objective 13 a bullet under 14 is more related than the bullets that are currently under 14 to me. Because mixed use and affordable housing are not necessarily the same. You're not accomplishing the objective simply by creating affordable housing.
I think this is a major theme of what we need to in plan, but it really has very little to do with economic development strategies.
Mm-hmm. I don't agree with that, but I want to hear what everybody else thinks about this. This is kind of a big point. Let me do a, we have time for this, and we're going to go around the room and get a little sound bite from everybody here. On a scale of 1 to 10, we'll start with you, Steve, so get ready. How important do you think the affordability issue is in Springfield? Housing of all types. We live here, we work here. So on a scale of 1 to 10, and you're looking out 10 or 15 years, current trends all taken into consideration, is how big an issue is this?
Seven.
Don?
Eight.
Carrie?
Seven.
I see it as a much bigger issue than we can deal with.
11?
It's a national issue, but it's a regional issue. I mean, it's really,
you got it right up there with a 9 or a 10 for importance in the future? Okay.
8.
Well, I think part of it is our job. I mean, I think there's two components of affordability. One is the basic cost of construction. The other is affordability of the wage. And the more jobs we have and the higher wages those jobs pay, the more the homes are affordable. And so I think, you know, economic development does impact people's wages or their future emotional opportunities, a number of things. So I think we have a role in this, but not so much on the housing cost, the carpenters and stuff like that. It is to raise the wage level of Springfielders. So, I don't know if that means it's a 10 or a 5 word, but I just, you know, I think...
You need a number.
7.
10.
10.
I'll say 7.
Mm-hmm. 8.
9.
I think sometimes what comes into play is when you have renters that are disrespectful toward the residents, and it basically gets trashed. And so unfortunately, the next people to rent, even though they're very respectful of it, they basically pay for what the prior resident does. So the landowner says, you know, I'm afraid, and so I'm going to have to bump the rent up on you just because, you know, I'm afraid of this happening again, and I have to raise it to accommodate how much I have to clean up.
Sure. It's a common story. I think we average out to somewhere right around 8, which I just would like to see recorded there so that we're not losing the idea that affordable housing is kind of hand-in-hand with economic development. The difference in household income between Eugene and Springfield is $10,000, which if you took $10,000 out of your budget right now, your quality of life would be impacted. And what it happens in Springfield is it impacts the housing stock that we have, and not going into any detail, but I'd really like to take a closer look at if we're getting all these high-paying jobs. If we don't, are we driving our workforce to Bonita and Crestwell and end up people driving into Eugene Springfield where the jobs are, living somewhere else?
Okay. But Dan, you got to keep in mind that one of the reasons the income is different is people choosing, traditionally Springfield has been a cheaper place to live than Eugene, so people who live in the metropolitan area are choosing to live in where they can afford to.
That's part of it, but the gulf between the two is almost as wide as any other places you can find within 50 miles of each other. So it's just something we're closing, and we need to continue to think about that.
To say that I'm not sure in the end that I'll agree with the issue of developing, you know, more apartments in Springfield. I mean, I really focus on raising the wages, and I like building more apartments. So not for decision tonight, I'm just saying that I better focus on one side versus the other side, because I think Springfield has more than its fair share of apartments, and for too long we've been more cost of living place. And I think we mature as a community, we don't know we have had that strong component in our future.
Okay, we're going to have to go rather quickly here. We can get out at 8 o'clock. And if I could ask David to distribute Stephen's documents so that it's front of us in case somebody needs to leave right away. Number 10, encourage development of healthcare related. Provide, number 15, the necessary public facilities and services to allow economic development. Under that, plan for infrastructure development through the use of capital improvement plan to finance infrastructure improvements. Support development of citywide high-speed internet access and improve the library. Comments?
I just think, you know, again, we need to be real explicit about some of the fundamentals that are needed in terms of public facilities and services, and that's a very broad term, so maybe private facilities to some degree. But it's availability and reliability of power and water and transportation and air service, and those are just fundamentals for the business growth.
Please. Where did the high-speed internet access point come from? We're very well deployed in this city.
Staff, that point was offered up by a member of the committee about high-speed internet.
Yes, somebody said it on the survey.
Yeah. We pretty well have DSL anywhere in the city now. The lines are good. And we have Comcast cable everywhere. And we have the YMAX system. It's a good one. Other than maybe the businesses that need a T1 or something bigger, you've very well got about as good as you're going to get in any community.
We do have good service. Okay, we've got three more to do, and we have 8 minutes to go. Attract sustainable businesses and support sustainable development. Lots of stuff under there. Quickly, target recruitment of businesses that produce sustainable products, have sustainable business practice and or sustainable manufacturing processes. Provide faster permitting and development review and reduce development fees for development projects that are certified as sustainable to national recognized standards for the buildings program. Provide incentives for development that uses sustainable building materials and solutions. Provide incentives for the use of sustainable energy, such as solar, wind. Provide transportation policies that reduce reliance on automobile with a reduction of emissions. When developing policies that will impact land outside the UGB, consider future agricultural needs and economic opportunities to protect agricultural lands for production of local food. Lots there.
Yeah.
Mike, go ahead.
Well, I was saying there's not enough time for me to debate most of these bullets. As far as how I feel, honestly, I have some disagreement with many of them, the way they're worded.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time, so we'll have the Kelly corollary next time. Is there a way to kind of sum up of remarks from today's meeting and let people have a little bit of an email
exchange.
Sort of exchange on some of this? Because this is a pretty big one. And, again, I think Mike had a point earlier about we want to sound like every other city and how do we make it distinctive. And a lot of cities aren't being distinctive with this, but... any kind of general comment about this objective? Does anybody disagree with the objective, much less the strategies? We all agree it's a good objective to have in our plan?
If I knew what it was, I might. I've never been able to find anybody who really defined what it was.
We're going to figure that out for you in the next meeting.
There you go.
Okay, we're moving on. And we're coming back. And maybe this will be a nice email discussion among committee members. Streamline the development process in Springfield. I'm assuming this means whatever a company or business needs to go through in order to get established, expand, or otherwise exist in the city of Springfield, correct? Is that kind of accurate? So it has a lot to do with the city. Okay, I want to make sure.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
This came out of comments that somebody made on the committee. When we brought this up with council, the question was, is it not streamlined already? And what else would we do to make the process go faster? And so I guess it really depends on the perspective you're looking at, how big the problem it is. You know, at one level, that the city is obligated to process for it. Specified time, and so it's not totally clear what the permanent development process would be.
A lot of developers would have a different perspective. Doug, did you have anything you want to say?
It just takes longer than we want it to. I think a lot of times people wanting to put a project together in the city are not aware of all of the hoops that they got to jump through, and if in the first meeting with the city they can be given an idea of all of the steps that they're going to have to accomplish and try and do some of them simultaneously rather than in one finish before you start the next one. I mean, I better not make comparisons between cities, but...
I understand.
Doug, is the perception, I just have to teach you, is the perception that the city still has a long way to go?
The perception is that the city of Springfield is catching up with Eugene in some of their processes.
You mean taking longer?
Yeah. It used to be a lot simpler in Springfield. But, I mean, you've got to go a long way to catch up with Eugene in the complexities. But
yeah, and I think, you know, all development's a little bit more complicated, but I don't think this is a goal that you would ever give up trying to make it as streamlined as possible, is it?
Yeah, I think, the experience I've had with that additions is Springfield is so much better than Eugene was. And all of a sudden, the last time we started getting some things, but what I've always liked about Springfield is there was somebody who was accountable in the department. Yeah. Or in Eugene, nobody's accountable. Mm-hmm.
everyone's listening here.
Just a, you know, I think it's a laudable objective, and just like number 16, or the second bullet of number 16 about providing faster permitting and development review for like lead projects or something, I just don't know how you do that. I mean, if you had two projects side by side and one decided to build a lead building and one didn't, how are you going to streamline the process more for that just because they're a lead certified building? I mean, I don't know really how much you can streamline, you know, state building permit review and something that, you know, you're going to have to go through one way or the other. So I'm a little concerned about kind of over-promising something that maybe you can or can't deliver on. It'd be great if you could, but, you know, it was one.
Okay, last objective. Redevelop brownfields as the opportunities for reuse arise. Develop policies to support development of redevelopment of brownfields and inventory brownfields in Springfield and Valley Lake. Which brownfields meet the requirements for cleanup based on federal grant guidelines?
What is the definition of brownfield?
Reuse land, or is it land that has a problem?
Federal criteria for abandoned sites and so on and so forth that have contaminated soils and need cleanup, like there we got oil chemicals.
Old dry cleaners.
There's also, there's also brownfield programs for redevelopment of urban blight. And that's something we're looking at.
Is it brownfield now?
There's brownfield money available.
How many do we have in the city, brownfields?
In Springfield?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we know,
Let me take a shot at that. The last time we looked at it in terms of are there brownfields that would rise to the level that it would be worth our effort to try to chase some federal money to try to redevelop them. For example, Booth Kelly. Everybody would think Booth Kelly's a brownfield. That ought to be easy pickings. It's not. It's just not. But I think in terms of there's a program called Brownfield Economic Development Initiatives. That's something that Government Services is starting to look at right now as an opportunity for downtown. We might be able to prepare, you know, parts or all of downtown is going to be. That's something to look at.
Okay. It's eight, just a minute before 8, and I see that we didn't get through the agenda. But I didn't know how to make it go much faster than that. Is there an... David, why don't you talk to that point of review buildable lands, inventory and assumptions, 25 minutes, and next steps. We didn't do the item number 5. Are we in trouble? Do we have homework? Or what's the deal?
Well, first of all, you're not in trouble. We're planning on a homework assignment anyways, because as you probably remember, we are giving you the month of August off because of, there's no meeting schedule, so it's considered a summer recess. So we were planning on sending out some local lands inventory information about the last week of August or so. I'll let Bob quickly present on this on the agenda for 5 minutes, give you a kind of overview of it. So I'll ask Bob, now if you want to
I think it's a little challenging, and we went over this just to use a couple extra minutes in the submission. With the TAC last Friday, they struggled with it, and so put together something a little different to try and communicate this to the committee. The issue really revolves around how we classify lands. At a high level, I think people are too big interested. If you got something that's vacant, it looks vacant, there's nothing on it to make a piece of land. At the other end of the spectrum, you have things that are developed, and we would consider those things with functional businesses that are committed for this planning period, so they're probably not going to change. Okay. In between there, you have this kind of creek swell potential area that is redevelopable, or what we call potentially redevelopable. And we think of it as kind of a continuum from more potential to less potential. And we think a lot of debate in this community is going to center around where we draw those boundaries. And so we went through, we've done a lot of analysis with the GIS data, and I'll say this on the record, it's kind of messy, the data that we've got to work with. So there's things like all of the assessed values stuck on one portion of a site, and the rest of it's all zero assessed value. So traditional approaches we would take to look at, say, assessed value don't work very well in that context. And so what we were going to propose to you was a rule-based approach to addressing this. And we had three scenarios we were going to advocate that if you instruct us to use the middle scenario, which we think is a pretty good net for identifying things. When we look at them, we can say, yeah, it's plausible that that will redevelop in a 20-year period. And I think it's really important for the committee to remember we're looking at 20 years here, because if we extend that time frame out indefinitely, everything's redeveloped potentially, right? But there's economics here that we have to pay attention to. Policy can influence that, of course, because there's economics. So I don't know how you guys would like to go through that. We'd like to get some input from the community before we pull the trigger on this. And put a bunch of effort into finalizing land inventory, and I'm certain there's going to be some differences of opinion among many members about where we ought to set those thresholds.
Maybe if we ask you to do this, I mean, we have a kind of what's going to seem like a long time here, and maybe if we prevail upon the committee to really pay attention, and you could put out in a sort of a summary form kind of what are the decision points when you're making these assumptions? Are you going to get into floodway plain? Are you going to get into...
No, I'm mostly talking about redevelopment. So okay. The constraints we can deal with, other things that happen, for example, and I was going to show you some slides from Glenwood, is there's a cemetery in Glenwood, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no improvement value on that. When you use traditional rule-based approaches, it comes up as vacant. Well, it's not vacant. It's what we would call committed, right, to use. It's not going to transition, at least disturb it. The city, we're thinking about transitioning that use. But there's a lot of examples like that we're dealing with. Substations are coming up as redevelopable and so on. And so we'd like some discretion that we can work with staff to look at those things and say, these are committed uses. They're central to an existing employer. And take them out of the inventory, and then just try and define some spectrum that this redevelopment might occur with, and put some sideboards on it, essentially.
Well, following up on Dan's ideas, it sounds like you have a good handle on what the questions might be. Could you sort of, in the staff, maybe put something out and say, this is the issue, this is what our recommendation, maybe an alternative, and then we could maybe respond back to you via email. Is that a way that could work?
Sure, yeah, sure. It could work. It won't be as effective as sitting around this table and having you interact with each other on it.
I'm not opposed to another meeting.
No, neither am I.
We, with our input, maybe the discussion that we'll just be a little bit more knowledgeable, so we don't have to start from A. If you say, here's the continuum, frame the discussion for us and give us as much information. Next time we meet, we can dive into that and be a little bit more productive and timely. I know there's a lot to get through. And this is going to be where we disagree on some of the pronouncements of whether this is, what kind of land this is, usable, developer. Mohawk Shopping Center is going to develop in the next 20 years, right, Doug?
Considerably sooner than that, I hope.
We do too.
Yeah. Well, we are making some assumptions based on council priorities, and so we're looking at Glenwood, probably going to make some pretty aggressive assumptions about changes. The whole area is not going to redevelop out over this period, but as well as downtown and some of the areas that are priorities. But this is, it's an area that's going to be a challenging discussion for the committee to have, and I think what I would propose, with your permission, is that we go ahead and just run this using these mid-range estimates. We've already classified everything, so it's not a big deal for us to tell you how many acres would fall in, less inclusive category and a more inclusive category. And really what we end up doing is having to compare that to how much land the city needs and see where the deficiencies occur, because those redevelopment sites will then get lumped in with the vacant sites and do the ultimate comparison. I think even if we were to get, if we were able to get to that discussion this evening, I think there would still be plenty of discussion in the future on this issue. I just think it's one of those things we're trying to get a little bit of direction from.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't get to it, but it sounds like we'll have to get to it next time. Any last comments? Thank you, Stephen. This looks pretty interesting. We'll get to it and read it. Anybody else have anything? We're a little after our time. David?
Well, again, thank you all for coming tonight, and I'll try to keep you abreast on email or via email in terms of some homework assignments here coming up. But again, enjoy most of the month of August. And yes, we have a public workshop on actually a week from tonight, July 31st, and that's going to actually be in this room here. So let me know if any of you are interested in attending, or if anybody you know is interested. I've received some RSVPs, but not a lot. So.
Guy, did you have something?
Well, just when is the next meeting, so we're all on the same page.
Oh, for the next meeting. Okay, good point.
September
25th. September 25th? Is
everybody... fourth Thursday.
Okay, September 25th. Any other thing good for the order? Thank you all, and thanks for being patient with that exercise. It was important to do, and we'll see you in a couple of months, if not before. What a problem. So we developed the St. Bernard Medical Center over there.
Always like orders to me.
I know we're going to put it out there.
I just love that walk along.
I just like, you know, we know
I'm taking an MRI right there. This building.
Well, they were using this for instance.
But that's
now listen.